It is better to speak, remembering we were never meant to survive. A Murderbot solo leveling fan fiction. Written by God of Laundry Baskets, with heavy inspiration from Opal Song. Read by God of Laundry Baskets. Summary. Murderbot wakes up in Korea. It's probably all the system's fault, if we're being real. Unit offline. Systems initializing. I woke up without knowing where I was. My internal systems were confident I hadn't been out for more than 150 hours, but I'd been on a ship with Mensa, and now I was very much on a planet. Gross. None of my drones had made it with me, so I begrudgingly opened my eyes and sat up to look around. I was in some sort of cave system. Behind my back was a giant set of ornate stone doors, taller than was practical. They were cracked open. I levered myself up and readied my energy weapons as I scanned the space. I wasn't picking up on any signals from the feed. My scan picked up on one human ahead of me about 200 meters. I approached cautiously, wishing I had my drones. The darkness of the room was like a physical presence on my back pressing down. This was a stupid thing to do. But so far, they were my only option to see what the fuck was going on. I was wearing just a black sweatshirt and loose pants with many pockets. Someone must have removed the couple of drones that were inside my pockets before I came online. I didn't know how these humans would feel about a sec unit mysteriously appearing in their cave. If I was lucky, I'd be able to pass as an augmented human. When I crossed the threshold, I sped up. The iron scent of blood permeated the room to an extent I was baffled how I could have missed it before. Were the air filters that well hidden? There was no movement as I sped across the room towards the shapes at the center, energy weapons deployed. The air was still and thick. There was nothing. Other than the blood. And the dead humans. I didn't like it. The feed was completely dead. No signs there had ever been one in this space. I'd been on a fair number of planets, abandoned mining settlements, trashed transit stations, that I was familiar with dead feeds. But usually there were remnants left behind, emergency markers, old ads, the flicker of life even when nothing else remained. It felt like here I'd just wandered off into a cave where no human had been before. Except these giant fucking doors and statues weren't something that could have formed naturally. And, again, there were a number of dead humans all around the room. Still no movement. The only sound was a faint breath of the human at the center. Unless this human had just gone on a murder spree, something that happened a lot less than the entertainment feed would have you believe, there was something I was missing. I had more questions building that I wanted answered by the second. When I got to the altar in the center of the room, a small human lay spread out, covered in blood. More blood than a human could survive losing. I don't have anything but some basic med modules. Where was MedSys when you needed it? Or art. But I figured if this one was breathing, I'd at least see what I could do. Before I could do more than reach towards the unconscious human, a strong feed presence appeared faster than I could react, and I can react pretty fucking fast. It expanded rapidly, flooding into my systems and overwhelming them. Uh-oh. Unit, offline. Systems initializing. When I came online, my eyes were shut, and I could hear humans talking all around me. I couldn't feel the machine intelligence that had knocked me offline. Then again, I hadn't sensed it till I was nearly upon the unconscious human. Yeah, I wasn't happy about that either. The humans were talking about me and the unconscious human we'd found. It sounded like they'd been sent in to help and were just incredibly late. This was uncomfortable. I could feel them looking at me. I reached out through my local feed, clumsy, performance reliability 74%, and was able to connect to a small camera one of the humans was holding. It was pointed straight down at the cave floor, but no blood, so I was apparently out of the altar room. The camera also seemed to be fixed to a device the human held in their hands. Was this some kind of pre-CR technology? I tried to check their feed profile, but none of the humans here had one. Even if there wasn't a feed, you should still be able to access locally available data. The device I'd hopped into didn't seem to have even a rudimentary bot connected to it. I sat up before any of the humans could try to touch me. "Oh," potential threat one exclaimed. "You're awake? Are you all right?" Obviously, I was awake. I looked around. There were 5 humans with historical gear, like something you'd see in an ancient historical documentary. The unconscious human was next to me, but neither of us were in the room with the altar. At least they weren't dead.
"Did you move us?"
"No," one said. "We'd had a report of..." Potential threat 2 interrupted. "Who are you? You weren't part of the dungeon raid." These humans didn't recognize me as a sec unit. Their technology was ancient, no feed except my local feed, barely anything I could connect to. I didn't like it, but pretend to be another hapless human was a go. If they had weapon scanners or a med scanner, I was screwed. Humans didn't have energy weapons built into their arms, but they were still talking to me, so that seemed unlikely. I'd been thinking about this too long. Rin. "Rin," 2 said leadingly. When I didn't respond, I am very good at ignoring implicit questions. I have never been required to answer those, even when the governor module was active. 2 continued. "Do you have your identification on you? Hunter's license?" I held up my hand. I had the identity marker Art helped forge, implanted at the moment with the Rin identity. 2 stared at me blankly before trying again, slower and louder. "Hunter's license. Do you have your hunter's license?" I wondered if, in the history of the universe, that any communication had ever been improved by altering your speaking patterns like that. I seriously doubted it. I wasn't familiar with whatever this identification they were looking for was. "I don't..." Confirmed target 2 reached out to grab me. Bad idea. Before they could reach me, I grabbed their wrist instead and twisted, pulling him down to the ground while I rolled up to my feet. One of the potential targets behind me did something with their wrist, and I almost felt the ghost of the feed move as flame bloomed above their hand. One said calmly, "Kong, stop. Sir, please let Inspector Kong go. If you don't have your license, we're going to take you in for questioning. That's all. Please calm down." I was perfectly calm. I'd calmly break someone's wrist if they tried to grab me again. At least while this drama was going down, someone was checking over the unconscious human. A ping from the void grabbed my full attention.
"Check your inventory.
What? I checked again, but there was still no feed. Nowhere the ping could have come from. The devices the humans had in their hands didn't have the clarity of the message I'd just received. My inventory? I started checking my pockets cautiously. I paused. There was something in my back pocket. I pulled it out. It was made of some kind of treated fauna's skin. Inside were two hard plastic cards. Written on one of them was Hunter's License, E-rank, with a picture of my face. The other one had my face and a bunch of other information I wasn't sure what to make of yet. This wasn't in my pockets before. Well, it wasn't in my pocket before I woke up here. Who knows what the fuck was going on now? I was gonna figure it out. And I had a feeling the unconscious human had the answers. It turns out, despite having my hunter's license, they still wanted me in for questioning. Funny how that worked. It wasn't until 37 hours in, I started to accept there wasn't going to be a quick way home. I had no idea how I'd gotten here, but there was no reasonable way I could have crashed onto this planet. It was like an extremely unrealistic serial. The humans here were universally unaugmented. The feed was non-existent, though they had a rudimentary approximation with the internet. Instead of weapons and combat bots, they had skills whose power depended on the rank of the human. And they had portals full of monsters that would appear randomly just about anywhere. In the middle of city streets, the bottom of the ocean, on tops of mountains. The monsters weren't fauna. They also had fauna, since this was a planet, but the monsters were different. Apparently, this planet hadn't always had these portals, but I didn't see much concern over why it started. People had just moved on, and now it was a career path for humans to deal with the inconvenient murder dungeons appearing in their cities. I had nothing to my name, except the media in my internal storage and the clothes I'd arrived in. Somehow, I'd obtained a hunter's license and identification card for the corporation I'd landed in. My hunter's license listed the skill Full Recovery that I could use once a day to recover from any damage, which was nice since I certainly didn't trust any medsis here to touch me. The machine intelligence that had knocked me offline was the only clue I had that could lead me home. I couldn't find any record of any technology like it, or even basic bots anywhere in the internet except in the fiction section. This planet only had the most rudimentary space travel. The only way I was getting off this planet was if I could figure out how I'd gotten here. I couldn't even go investigate the dungeon I'd arrived in to see if it had any clue to what brought me here. When a dungeon is cleared out, apparently it and everything inside disappears. Do not ask me how that was supposed to work. I'd love to see Art try and figure it out. The remaining connection I had to the dungeon was the human everyone else was buzzing about. No one understood how he survived, and no one had any record of the temple I'd found him in. Something still felt off. There wasn't a feed on this planet, but when I visited him, carefully cutting myself out from any footage, I could feel something almost familiar when I was physically close to him. I was going to be stuck waiting for him to wake up for a while. Things didn't really clear up after Jinu woke up, but we both got to discover the exciting development of a machine intelligence that shouldn't exist on this planet. It was almost threatening, and became more so once we found out it could literally teleport Jinu from the hospital room to a penalty dungeon. It was also my only option for figuring out how to get back home to Dr. Mensa. If I'd have realized what a pain it was going to be to stick around Jinu, I might have made different choices. I have wildly optimistic expectations for my ability to make good choices. Instead, I got to continue following Jinu around to secret dungeons only he could get into and just hope he survived. I'm sure you can tell how thrilled I was by that idea. I started watching some of the serials this planet's entertainment feed had to offer while I tried not to think about it. He was eventually discharged from the hospital. They were even worse than most humans at noticing discrepancies because the system, what Jinu had taken to calling the machine intelligence, had somehow made physical alterations to Jinu's body. For all that humans were oblivious at the best of times, it seemed extraordinary that simple negligence could have people discounting changes that dramatic. However, I couldn't find any evidence of the system altering the outsider's perception of Jinu. When we arrived at Jinu's apartment, I got ready to make my exit and slip away. I could probably set up almost anywhere, since I don't actually need to sleep or eat. Before I was able to make my escape, Jinu opened the door and said, "Jinna, this is my friend Rin. It'll be staying with us for a while. It likes that drama series you like." Ugh. Possibly my least favorite thing on this planet, the pronoun situation. I'd already created a filter for it, but I was still working on smoothing it out. I still felt my skin crawl every time it came up. "Brother, they really... you have friends?" Jinna asked. "No," I answered. She laughed. I wasn't joking, but whatever. I begrudgingly stepped into the apartment and out of the way as I spotted Jinna heading for her shoes, backpack on, clearly ready to go out. So, I will be spared having to make conversation with a strange human adolescent. For now, I resign myself to having to talk to her later, since, apparently, I'm going to be sticking a little closer than I'd planned to Jinu. I stared at the wall as Jinu and Jinna talk. No cameras are in the apartment other than the ones connected to the phones. "I have one of those phones, too," Jinu insisted I should get one. "People here think it's extremely erratic behavior if you don't have one to connect to other systems. It lets me carry a fixed camera I can place, even if that feels painfully primitive. The building itself has a few cameras I was able to get access to, but I added a note to find out my options for adding additional ones on this planet. If I can figure out how the system is monitoring Jinu, that would solve a lot of my problems." Jinu knocked on the door to draw my attention, and I rolled my eyes. "Yes, I noticed Jinna left. I'm not unobservant. I just don't want to talk. I'm thinking." Jinu nodded and moved into the living room. At least he'll leave me alone when I make it clear I'm not in the mood to be around people. The door here is secured only by a small mechanical lock and is made of a material I wouldn't even have to try in order to break down. The thought of even going into a recharge cycle here makes my skin itch. I have a fair amount of time to figure that out. More time, if my full recovery skill also heals things other than my organic components getting ripped to shreds. I hadn't gotten a great baseline yet. They had a couch which faced a display surface, which Jinu settled into after he took off his shoes. I stood awkwardly in the doorway. I wanted to sit down and see how good the display surface was, but I also didn't want to take off my shoes. My research said that I should not be entering with them on, but my feet are weird. I haven't had to take them off yet. I managed to avoid it while Jinu was at the hospital by going between his room, what they called the movie theater, and a hotel. No, I didn't have any money. But the security on the systems they used for booking things was seriously ancient. As long as I had a phone, I could access any of the systems outside the dungeon and book myself tickets and rooms. Whatever the system was, it seemed more unlikely by the day that it wasn't from this era of technology, which made me wonder where it was from, what it wanted. A ping popped up and I glanced over at Jinu. He was staring at his phone. When I accessed the device, I saw he was scrolling through raid listings. What? My landlord called. I need to get some money, so I'll be picking up a raid. His lips quirked up. I assume you'll be tagging along. I pulled the raid listings up in my own feed and opened the raid that he was looking at. Quickly grabbing the names of the other hunters that are looking to hire out, I started scanning for other mentions of them in the media. Sifting through the data to filter out all the false hits, I find the Hunters Association records for their raid history. This is the raid you want to go on. You think they can do anything to us? Jinu asked. Before I responded, he continued, they're offering good money, and we're not going to get a better option than this. No one hires E-ranks for a C-rank dungeon. I pulled the records for the number of deaths for hunters on raids with Hong Dong-suk that aren't part of his core crew, versus the published average deaths for C-rank raids. We should just report them. They shouldn't be going on raids with anyone. We can do that after we get through the dungeon. I see the set to Jinu's shoulders from the reflection on his display surface and sigh, resigned. Humans. My own feed also showed me that Jinu was probably right that this was his only option to join a raid of this rank. I know my hard currency card from the corporate realm was useless. Depressing that here, too, were desperate humans throwing themselves into danger for money. Fine. When we got to the raid site, Hwang Dun-suk already seemed to recognize Jinu, his status as the weakest E-rank carrying further than I'd prefer. I tried not to take that as an ominous sign, though my risk assessment just continued ticking upward. The other hunters mingled while we waited for our last party member. Jinu messaged me. No healer. And we both signed the release form, I replied. This was going to be a shit show. Yeah, looks like you were right. Of course I was. Did he think I was just guessing that these humans had murdered their other team members? I might not have experience with all the weird powers humans here had, but data was data. I didn't bother responding. Our last party member hurried up with a giant grin, and I couldn't help but let out a sigh. A young human who couldn't be that far out of adolescence, but unlike us, he was wearing giant bulky armor. A quick search told me that the armor was expensive, more than a D-rank hunter would typically be able to afford. I stepped up while the young human signed the release form, which gets Jinu to raise an eyebrow at me. The young human, Yu Jinho, took that as a sign to start talking to me. I didn't respond, but it didn't seem to slow Jinho down. It's my first dungeon, said Jinho, and I lost control of my expression as I slowly turned my head to Jinho, who just shouldered the packs for the other hunters. I took a deep breath before going to pick up my pack as well. I tagged Jinho as a priority client. It didn't calm me down or make me feel better about any of this, but I had to believe that between Jinho and myself, we could keep this human alive. Since I was only approaching to take a scan of his name from the documents to help eliminate false entries on my search, I didn't bother responding to Jinho. I kept the search going in the background as we entered the dungeon. Jenna was the only one in the party I hadn't been able to run a background check on yet, since his acceptance of the raid hadn't happened on the feed, internet, whatever. I sighed as the internet cut out as I crossed the dungeon threshold. Of course, nothing could be that easy. This was a known issue, but I was hoping that my unique access and the fact that the system didn't seem to have any issues crossing the border, I wouldn't have any issues either. I started playing the new serial I'd downloaded as we walked through tunnel after empty tunnel. It was a medieval-inspired Joseon, where the king died, though his wife was pretending he was still alive, and he sort of was, but he also wasn't. It was weird. And his son was sent out to investigate the monsters that were attacking the kingdom. It was interesting. Different than even the historical dramas that you could find in Preservation Alliance. It was weird to imagine a planet where even the limited feed provided by the internet wasn't around. It was boring, but I was used to that. Jinu pointed out that the ant monsters were attacking from the tunnel above us, and the fight began. I was just standing around. E-ranks weren't really expected to fight, even in weaker dungeon raids. One or two of the ants got near where we were stationed, but Jinu just kicked them. With his upgraded strength, their carapace, or whatever, just shattered. The other hunters were proficient, which was something, I guess. They started to investigate the area while Dunsuk talked to Jinu, and I tensed as they noticed the ant Jinu killed. Jinu didn't react. I would check my own expression, but no cameras. It was fine. The core hunter group moved on quickly enough, eager to get to the boss of the dungeon and the mana crystals that made up the reason why humans came into these places in the first place. Well, that and the fact that if no one did, the monsters would escape and murder everyone. But there would have been better ways of handling the dungeons if currency wasn't a factor. So I attributed most of the incompetence towards greed and the rest towards general human inefficiencies. It was only after reaching the boss, seeing it asleep, that Jinu messaged me through the system's not feed, telling me to hold on. I watched the other hunters leave me, Jinu, and Jin-O with the mining gear while they went back to get some stuff. And then they blew up the entrance, trapping us inside and waking up the boss. Ugh. I wish Art was here. It would have something truly cutting to say about us letting ourselves get trapped. Maybe I should have pushed harder with Jinu, that we should have turned back. But I'm still just too used to humans insisting on doing stupid things that'll get themselves killed. And this planet was weird. And the humans all have weird powers, so who knows what to expect. And I'm great at making excuses. Plus, it was just embarrassing how bad this group of hunters was at killing people. If this was their plan, I would be shocked that they'd been getting away with it for so long, if I didn't know how bad humans were at security. How are they planning to get all the mana crystals out after waking up the boss? Assuming we were just two E ranks and one D rank, it wasn't like we'd make much of a dent on the boss's health. So then, they'd get to deal with a giant angry monster attacking them instead of sleeping peacefully. Why not wait till we'd gotten most of the crystals out? Idiots. I turned off my media as I grabbed Jinu and pulled him back out of the fight while Jinu sprinted past me towards the boss. I couldn't let Jinu get hurt because I was stupid enough to go along with this plan. Once Jinu was far back enough that we wouldn't be in danger of any of the wildly swinging limbs hitting us by accident, I let Jinu go and stepped in front of him, bringing up my energy weapons to aim at the GFS, giant fuck-off spider, but hesitated before firing. The GFS was focused completely on Jinu, who was managing to dodge all of its attacks so far. If I fired and drew its attention to us, I would probably be fine, but I was considerably less confident in my ability to keep Jinu that way if the GFS decided to take out the easier targets first. The system had been steadily building up pressure in its knot feed. I started trying to cautiously poke my way in, trying to figure out what the fuck it was doing, or how shit the security was on everything else. I wish the system was a bit easier to crack. Part of the issue was that it did not interface with sex systems external to itself, so my usual methods to worm my way through the defenses were hardly acknowledged. It was code, but it also wasn't, in a way that was wholly different from how I was kind of like a bot, but decidedly not. It was weird. I recognize that I've called a lot of things weird since arriving here, and the word might be losing its meaning, but I don't know if I can emphasize enough how weird it was. I'm not enjoying my time being reincarnated into a historical fantasy world. Was the system trying to mess with the dungeon? Out of the corner of my eye, I was going to buy a fucking camera that I could stick on my clothes as soon as we were back. Thinking I could do without was clearly a mistake. I saw Jinno reach out to try and grab my shoulder. Running back my feet, I saw he'd been trying to get my attention since I'd dragged him back here. "What?" I asked, calmly. I had a lot of experience with humans in stressful situations. Yelling at overstressed and overstimulated humans was something the company's human supervisor might try, but it never worked. A sec unit wasn't allowed to yell at any of its clients, but the original point still stands that yelling, "Calm down," wasn't going to do anything but increase the stress of the situation. "We'd need to be at least a C rank to kill that thing, bro. We have to focus on escaping." Humans were slow sometimes. It should have been obvious with that first dodge, neither Jinno or I were E ranks. But he did have a good point. If I could get him to one of the tunnels above where the GFS had been resting, I'd be able to join Jinno in the fight without having to worry about Jinno being in the line of fire. "Do you think you'd be able to make it to the tunnel up there on your own?" I tilted my head towards the tunnel. "What? Where's Jinno?" Jinno asked, ignoring my question. Jinno, at the moment, was leaping around the cave like the gravity module had broken. I winced as, at that moment, he slammed into the crystals and shards flew our way. Great timing. I grabbed one of the bags that was on the ground and swung it around to block. There was a soft impact as the projectiles tore through the bag and cut through my sweatshirt. I tuned down my pain sensors and grabbed Jinno again, physically picking him up this time rather than ushering him around. Performance reliability, 89%. There wasn't much space in this cave for a fight with a monster this large. If we weren't careful, the GFS might kill us accidentally by just walking around. The main advantage we had was that the GFS was wholly focused on Jinno, so what we were mostly defending against was a ricochet from where the GFS and Jinno were tearing up chunks of the rock floor and crystals. That could still kill a human pretty quick if they weren't careful, but with the durability of humans on this planet, it was less likely. "Can you climb up there?" I point this time, hoping that'll get Jinno's attention. No luck. He stared straight at the fight in shock. "You guys aren't E-ranks, are you?" "Would it be better to try and explain?" "Too complicated," I said. "You saw our licenses." He turned, horrified eyes on me. I sighed. This was getting nowhere. "Give me your shield." Jinno scrambled to strip off the shield, dropped it, and then probably would have bent over to grab it, except he was in armor he wasn't used to wearing, and the weight threw him off balance and he started to fall. I grabbed his shoulder and kept him standing. He stumbled backwards until he ran into the cave wall. I grabbed the shield from the ground. Not an optimal position to have him in. I don't really like my clients with their backs to the wall, since it makes it difficult to maneuver, but this situation was rather different than most of my contracts. For one, the only large monsters I encountered on contracts were the fauna living on the planet. For two, none of my clients had powers out of an entertainment serial. Equipping the shield, I registered the stats and let out an impressed breath. Okay, with this, maybe I could keep us both alive for long enough to finish off the GFS. You faked, Jin-ho breathed out, but cut himself off. Ah, that was why he was behaving so irrationally. He thought we were false rankers. If he actually knew any details about cases where hunters falsified their rank to kill other humans, it'd be obvious that we didn't fit their profile. Honestly, why worry about false rankers when you quite literally already had hunters doing their, well, I wouldn't say best, to kill us already? Before I could get too distracted, Jin-woo landed next to us, tearing up the ground as he bled momentum off, and a flood of bright green something thick and viscous hit the rock in front of us. It started rapidly, eating into the rock floor, and I wasn't eager to test it even on my inorganic components. I just hoped the gas rising from the melted rock wasn't toxic to humans, since there wasn't anything I could do about it. Worrying about useless things seems to be how I keep busy now. Do you need help? I asked before Jin-woo could dart off again. He shook his head with a grimace. He pulled up his interface and applied an additional buff. A GFS leg barreled towards us. I shoved myself forward, putting Jin-woo's shield between me and the GFS, bracing myself behind the shield as I deflected the leg away from Jin-woo and Jin-woo. I saw more than felt Jin-woo take a step on my knee that was outstretched, onto the shield, and then up onto the GFS leg, running up towards the GFS's face. The slam of Jin-woo's dagger into the GFS's carapace echoed through the cave. I hoped that the speed boost was all he needed, but the GFS didn't seem to be slowing down. I used the shield to bash away any rock and crystal that flew our way. I let off a single blast, disintegrating the chunk of crystal flying towards Jin-woo. Better to have to answer some tough questions about exactly what I was than ending up with a dead human. Glancing around, I had brought us closer to the tunnel system in the cave ceiling. The mana crystals crept towards the opening, and I could probably climb them to get close, even carrying Jin-woo. But without a rope or structure in the rock wall, I don't think even I was going to be able to climb to the tunnel opening, especially while carrying Jin-woo. Before I could get back to figuring out how to get Jin-woo up and out of this cave, Jin-woo let out a scream. I glanced to see him flying at the GFS with his dagger outstretched in front of him, attempting to get at the face for a kill. And then, Jin-woo froze. He must have pushed himself too hard trying to get through the GFS's armor. The GFS didn't hesitate, pressing the advantage, and knocked Jin-woo hard into the rock. My human imitation code caused me to inadvertently let out a hiss. Jin-woo didn't bounce to his feet this time. No! Jin-woo! Jin-woo shouted. Then to me he yelled, "What are you doing? Go help him!" Except I couldn't fucking leave Jin-woo here undefended. Shit, whatever Jin-woo said, I needed to get over there. The defense boost the shield provided would hopefully let Jin-woo survive a hit even without me here if I gave it back. There was a burst of frantic, indecipherable messages from the system. Did it know this was going to happen? Was it trying to stop it? I wasted a second panicking over what to do before shoving the shield back into Jin-woo's arms. I know, but murderbots panic more than you'd think. We just do it faster than humans do. I started sprinting at my top speed over to Jin-woo as the GFS slammed its leg into Jin-woo a second time. I wasn't going to make it. But before I could throw myself at the GFS, Jin-woo exploded out from under the leg. Full fucking recovery. I could scream. Of course he hadn't used it today. My limbs tingled with the release of stress chemicals. I twisted, throwing myself into the crystal, and kicked back to reverse my momentum so I could get back to Jinno and stay out of Jinnu's way. I pulled him back to the wall and away from the fight where he'd started to approach. He thought we were false rankers and we were going to kill him, but he also wanted to rescue us? Why? "He's fine," I told Jinno. Jinno landed on the GFS's face, and this time, when he stabbed downwards, I could just make out the splatter of fluids as he finally broke through the carapace. The dagger applied the paralysis and bleeding effect. It was just a matter of time before the GFS fell. I pulled Jinno with me as I rotated our position back to where the bags got ripped to shreds. I had plenty of ideas for how an intrepid adventurer would get out of this cave, except my usual serials suggested I should have a propelled anchor as well as a rope. They didn't have anything like that here. If we tore enough of the bag apart, maybe we could fashion a rope? But I was more optimistic of Jinno just punching our way past the rock. I grabbed one of the mining axes. It was definitely not the kind of mining equipment I was used to. I had to watch over enough of it during my contracts with the company, so I was uncomfortably familiar with the mining equipment of the corporate rim. Whether we'd get out before anyone came looking for us was another question. I didn't want to wait around to find out. Jinno might be able to get us up to the tunnel with the jumps he'd been making to get to the GFS's face. "A boss, do you need any water?" Jinno asked. I managed to resist my first instinct, which was to ignore him. I also didn't go with my second impulse of walking away and staring at a wall so I didn't have to talk to Jinno. Instead, I looked up past Jinno's shoulder and cued an old episode of Sanctuary Moon to start playing. My expression must have been less neutral than I intended because Jinno started sweating and grinning with a stress response. I swear, I've gotten worse at interacting with humans since coming here. I wasn't sure if I should blame Jinno or the system for that. Just kidding. It was all me. "No. You can give it to Jinno when he comes by." I have no idea how Jinno's going to explain this, but I was fully willing to make this his problem. Also, I don't eat or drink, and I wasn't going to explain that to Jinno. I doubted a comment about how my augments required a special diet would fly on this planet. I bent down to grab some of the gear that was scattered by the bag, but Jinno scrambled down after me, quickly assuring me, "No, no, I got this, boss. You two rest." He grabbed the bag and started putting the gear into it again, carefully placing the stuff inside so hopefully it wouldn't just pour out of the rips when he tried to pick it up. I stood up. Don't need to tell me not to pick something up twice. Jinno was done harvesting the items from the monster. I tapped his knot feed. He seemed satisfied, which was good. Jinno started talking and I tuned the two of them out. Something was still off with the system and I withdrew to focus on that. And then we heard some pebbles bouncing off the crystal. I upped my priority on my task to figure out the drone situation. Hong Dong Suk would have never snuck up on us if I'd been able to maintain even a minimal drone scouting formation. Don Suk and his strike team stood at the edge of the tunnel where the boss had come from, so it would have led to the dungeon entrance. Nice to know if we decided to make that our exit. Don Suk took a breath, ready to gloat. Humans always want to do that. It reminded me unpleasantly of Tlacy. Before he could say anything, I raised my arms to deploy my energy weapons and find out what the fuck the system had been doing. I get a glimpse of the new quest the system pulled up for Jinno. "There are people present who want to kill the player. Defeat them all and ensure your safety. Warning, if you do not complete this quest, your heart will stop." My system's locked down by the governor module. I experience an overwhelming surge of fear that somehow the system had overwritten Art's modifications. Performance reliability, 67%. I didn't think that the system was as large as Art was, but what did I know? It had more processing power than I did, for sure. I didn't know what it was. If it was some kind of alien remnant that had just been waiting for this moment. 5 seconds ticked by with my every thought halted. This might not seem like that long, but trust me when I say this is a very long time for me to freeze up. Before I made the system check that confirmed the governor module was still inactive, my performance reliability immediately started climbing out of sheer relief. Art would certainly have words to say about that moment. Don't think about it. With that confirmed, no time to relax, I started my counter hack. Because that's all this was, a hack of my systems, almost like something that a combat bot would try. But the system and whatever this code was could alter the physical world in ways that should not be possible. So how was I supposed to counter that? Excuses. I won back control of my hearing first, and Don Suk was indeed monologuing at Jin-O, asking him to kill me and Jin-U. It was like he thought he was the villain in a serial. Because Jin-O wasn't a complete idiot, he said no. I forked off a process to start cracking the quest the system had given Jin-U. It didn't like that and started ripping through the code. I left a code bundle on the interface Jin-U used to accept quests. I could feel the system's presence waiting for him to accept this quest. The system reverted my changes to the quest penalty, and Jin-U triggered my code bundle. It closed the window before Jin-U's acceptance was registered. Humans were slow at processing visual input. While Jin-U had some sort of augment, he still processed most of the system's data as visual input rather than the code directly. He might experience some flickers of light while the system and I fought for control of it. Before I could move to my own code, I felt the burning stab through my gut. Jin-U shouted, "Rin!" and suddenly was much closer to me. If I could have flinched, I would have. I still couldn't see to confirm what was happening, but one of the targets with swords must have stabbed me. The system had locked me out of my pain sensors, so I couldn't even adjust them while I was dealing with this. "Please stand by. I am dealing with an alert," my buffer said. So the freeze hadn't corrupted that. I could feel the fluids leaking out of me and getting on my clothes. I cued a process to start spamming a flush of my buffer. It would limit the lines of retreat for the system's code. At the same time, I started working through my own code, ripping out the malicious hack the system had dropped to freeze me. It was making use of my non-organic neural pathways to freeze me in place. I was very familiar with those. Now that the panic had died down and the adrenaline had kicked in, the fix was fast to apply. It didn't hack the governor module. It was just using all the systems that allowed the governor module to work. That made me feel so much better. I guess I was glad it hadn't found the one that allowed the governor module to melt my brain. Otherwise, I'd be on the ground convulsing, quietly. I lost the fight over Jin-U's interface, but the distraction had bought me enough time to cut the system's access to my internal feed and lock that shit down. I wasn't fast enough. I could hear the fight ending. Jin-U had dragged me backwards out of the way. What a turn of events. I ripped my arm out of his grip and immediately fell to the ground. Performance reliability, 58%. But climbing, not great. I turned and cursed. Jin-U stood staring past everything. The bodies of the strike team surrounding him, and all too human blood on his face and dagger. The system had gotten what it wanted. Shit. I triggered full recovery, and my performance reliability instantly jumped to 93%. It hasn't gotten much higher than that since landing on this planet. Anxiety was fun like that. Was this the first time Jin-U had killed a human? I knew he'd been fighting in dungeons for a few years before we'd been dropped on each other. Should I say something to him? Before I could figure out what to do with my face, rocks started falling from the ceiling. Jin-U walked over and slammed his heel into the rocks, blocking the entrance. Either the initial collapse was weaker than I expected, or the dungeon collapsing weakened the rock itself. A gap appeared to the main tunnel, and we scrambled over the rocks and out to the exit. Great job, Murderbot. Shit. I worried how we were going to explain the dead humans. Up until the Hunter's Guild representative just blithely dismiss Dunsook's strike team's deaths. It was great for us, because I really didn't have any way to explain their deaths other than we murdered them. But it was also depressingly like being owned by the company again. The company also didn't care about dead humans unless it affected their bottom line. It was one thing we didn't have to worry about, at least. All that was left was trying to figure out what this world's trauma treatments were like. I wasn't holding out a lot of hope, or if I would have to talk to Jinu about what had happened myself. Please, no. The end. Thank you for listening. I'm so glad I don't get taken.